Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight, ladies and gentlemen, as I'm celebrating the high viewership for my tweet. And it feels so good, the restoration of free speech by Elon, especially after years of being under the iron fist of these tweakers of algorithm, the people who play behind the veil, the people who think they can manipulate humanity toward a better direction, but in doing so, they're making it worse. The leftists, the utopians, the AI tweakers of all kind that were in charge of the internet between 2018 to 2022 approximately. It's so good to have that possibility to test your ideas on the public space. And yes, not everything is perfect about Twitter, but a racialist vision of the world that is relevant, that addresses a current event, still has demand for it. And so in a system where these tweets constantly do just 1K views, I know that something is wrong. I know that I'm shadow banned, but I feel that under Elon, although not everything is perfect, and sometimes you feel that a tweet has arbitrarily been selected for shutdown, at least tweets can still make it. Some can make it. And that's really all I'm demanding. Some justice in the selection process so that ideas can compete for their own value. And for years you have to understand, I made it a job to attract attention on the internet. And I turned full time onto that job around 2017. So imagine you're a plumber. And your job is to make good pipes. And at some point, some company decides to come in and starts messing with your pipe at your pipes at random intervals. They decide, oh, this plumber, we're shutting him down this month. This plumber, we're going to blow his pipes up and it's all going to explode. That sucks as a plumber. When you've dedicated your life to plumbing, you want your work to be delivering the best for your customers, and you want to be rewarded when you do good. But what they did with the censorship on the internet is they took the Plumber JF. Plumber JF had a technique in his mind to generate memes, to generate things that are relevant to society, and most importantly, to call out the big lie of these humanist, leftist, liberals, and to say, hey, you can't even build a society on truth. We're very far from the moment you can build it on the goodness you claim to have for everyone around you. We're very far from building it on care. You can't even start with the truth. And this position is actually a very edgy position to have in 2024, that the truth as pre-science to anything else, almost, except existence. You don't want to die for the truth at a bad moment, but you almost want to die for the truth. And that puts me in a particular position to make commentary on the news that you will literally not hear anywhere else. Not in the first layer of the mediatic mainstream crap, not in their second layer, not in their third layer, anonymous Jews, not in their fourth layer, quasi-alt-right, alt-light, whatever crap. There is simply a truth that needs to be stated, and that the leftists have done everything to be hidden. And now the leftist civilization is crumbling under its own weight. And holy shit, does it feel good to just say the truth. Red Lobster. And who cares about Red Lobster? Their lobster tails are overcooked. Their buttered pots are disgusting. It's the most disgusting way you can eat seafood in 2024. Well, apparently you can't anymore in 2024, but at least in 2023. I don't give a shit about Red Lobster. But never forget what they took from you. They took Red Lobster from you. As a fine observer of the economic world and the social media, I've seen way too many Royal Rumble fights in Red Lobster. I mean, I've seen way too many cases of anonymous Reddit post telling the stories of how they would get in and take the all-you-can-eat shrimp buffet and order them for their children. I've seen way too many black people reporting on their social media, "Hey, I've been the victim of racism at Red Lobster because they were supervising my family to make sure that we weren't passing the free shrimp to our kids." I've seen enough of this to know that the closing of Red Lobster is a deeply racial issue. And you have people in denial, and I love that I can just state this elementary truth to them. Everyone knows it's true. You have to be in severe denial to honestly think it's not related. Here's what's happening with American society. The people, the fraction of black people is not increasing that much within American society. And that is partly due to the abortion rate. The abortion rate being high in the black population, at the level at which they breed and fertilize, they should be growing. With the current abortion rate, they are not growing. So it's not that there's more black people than there were a decade or two ago. There's mostly more Hispanics. But then what is happening with society? We have a withdrawal of the whites from the middle class, a withdrawal that is not voluntary at times. They are getting expulsed from being those who have the most money. And we have a system of affirmative action, some of it implicit, some of it explicit, that is pushing black people to be proportionately represented in those money-having positions of society, irregardless of talent. So what you have, the true phenomenon that's happening in American society, is not a diversification when you look at the white-black split. The whites are going down, the Hispanics are going very much up, the blacks are stable. What's happening is that the blacks have money now. And there is a whole class of restaurant that is addressing this new need. I would call them the Applebee's, TGI Fridays, and kind of Red Lobster to a certain extent. We have created jobs that were paying a certain salary. They were first occupied by white people, and eventually we have created a whole system of rewards for black skin that has led more people in black populations to be able to spend money. And that means they are more at Red Lobster than they used to be 20 years ago. That is what's happening. And people have received, to the leftist calling me out, JF, do you have evidence? Again and again, I see people, they have kept the receipt. We have this old video of a Royal Rumble fight between blacks. We have these testimonies of servers that are saying, hey, our deals are being abused, or hey, it's problematic. I'm not getting tipped by black families. You have a lot of people who knew that there was a racial problem at Red Lobster. Personally, as a white person, I've entered Red Lobster once to try it because I thought, oh my God, a place of seafood. That should be amazing. It turned out they serve you the cheapest seafood. It's overpriced. If you want some lobster tail, you're going to get it, but it's very high price. And their service is basically their cooking. Is the overcooked seafood, probably frozen seafood, in a butter, a bowl of liquid butter, literally. And a lot of people are saying very positive words on their biscuits. Okay, I don't know, because I never tasted the Cheddar Bay biscuits, and now they're gone. But I said a very simple, elementary truth. Red Lobster had a viable business model in a white middle-class society where customers would come in, eat the shitty food, and then pay anyway without causing troubles. It can't operate if one out of 10 customers wants to use the chairs as weapon in a Royal Rumble fight because they didn't get enough liquid butter with their lobster tail. I believe that that analysis is straight on. I believe this is what happened. Basically, the white middle class society, by being, by not looking for trouble, they can maintain certain things in existence that will not be maintainable in 2024. And you end up with what they call the cost of diversity. There's a real cost. There's a real cost, and as it turns out, Red Lobster. Red Lobster is one of the things that you can't have in a society that is too parasitic, too exploitative, in a society that doesn't have this kind of self-control of, hey, maybe there's not enough butter to my taste, but you know what? I'm going to shut up and I'm never going to come back. You don't have this anymore. Real Base Talk says, yes, this is what I first thought too. The all-you-can-eat meal and then sometimes people not paying and also not tipping. Yes, those are problems. So you have a totally different money haver in 2024. The average money haver in 2024 is less deserving of his wealth than the average money haver of 1980. And we're already starting to see the cracks in the machine. We're going to get more details and I'm going to show you what I talk about when I talk about the social media appearances of Red Lobster across the years. But before we get there, I do have some super chats to answer that came during the night. And one late yesterday during the show, but it seems to have come after the show because I didn't see it at all. Michael Montfort sends $10. Thank you so much for supporting the show. By the way, if you'd like to support the show like Michael, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, you can use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. Michael Montfort says, JF, speaking of babies, of course, I agree with your advice to inseminate. However, would you allow that sometimes it might happen that the woman with whom you have a baby, you might not actually want to spend your life with? What then? Well, I'll tell you, you asked the question at a personal level, so I can give you my personal answer, but I wouldn't say that my attitude with this is the most evolutionarily fit. I can also suggest a more pragmatic view. Personally, but I'm a very special guy, okay? I die on principle. I'm willing to die for principles. I'm willing to self-sacrifice. And it doesn't take much to trigger my principled stances. And I do have a principled stance for monogamous lifelong marriages. So personally, if I was in the dating market and there's a woman, I hate her, I can't see myself live my life with her, but she's an opportunity to make a baby, personally, I will self-abnegate. I would either choose to inseminate her and injure her for the rest of my life, which is often what I've done. Very often, I have stood by women who were fucking evil, okay? You can't even imagine. You don't know. I've seen the bottom of what this world has to offer. So, yes, I know sacrifice like this, and I do it. Why? Because I believe that no matter how much suffering I get, like, let's say I'm married with the devil who's beating me, and these things have happened in my life, so I'm not even talking to you about hypotheses. So let's say I'm married with the devil, literally the devil, evil woman in all ways. First, I have chosen to reproduce with her, so I somehow think that 50% of our genes isn't so bad, and that there are children to be made from this union. I have a duty to stand by her and to first protect the children against this devil. Second, me leaving will not improve the situation for the children. They'll be stuck with a woman who's evil to them. And so my stance has always been, on principle, I will stand by a woman no matter how evil she is. And of course, as it turns out, evil woman will also leave you and make false allegations against you. So in a way, you don't have to stay a long time before they will trigger a falsehood to justify them leaving you. Now, you might want to be a little less sacrificial than me if you're more pragmatic, and you might want to be that kind of guy who says, well, I'm going to inseminate her and then leave. But that's kind of asshole-y in my view, and I don't know. I don't feel that humanity is even worth maintaining if it's going to be that. If it's going to be such unlivable thing, and if it's going to be that you as a man don't have a place to make your children inherit some of your memes, ideas, and ways of surviving, I don't know if I'm into this that much, you know? But you might be the kind of guy who has loose principles. I'm really not. I couldn't live with myself if I had done this once in my life. Maybe you want to be a more loose principled guy, and I wouldn't even judge you, because in a world where the females are more and more crappy, it's inevitably the best option. Like, if you're one chance in a million of finding a girlfriend like I have right now, one chance in a million is a pretty risky bet to take. Most likely you're better just inseminating and leaving. So maybe, you know, the more pragmatic view is what you want to go for. Maybe you're more like me, a principled artist. But I personally have chosen in my life many times to die for the principle. And what I found is actually those are pretty nice moments in life. Like the moment where you make a stance, like I don't want to say I'm Jesus Christ, but it feels like you are martyrized by an evil world. And it feels like you stand there and you say, fuck it, I will yell liberty up to my death. I will yell the truths that you don't want to hear up to my death. And actually, every time I did that, I didn't die. Like, your first divorce, especially a divorce with false allegations, you think you're done. Like, holy shit, and especially a divorce with false allegation that gets you media coverage. You think, holy shit, that's it. So I died. I died in the reproductive market. But the reality of what happens when you die for principles is you are reborn in a stronger way. And in fact, every time I self-sacrifice and said, all right, I'm going to go all in on this, and it's either a death or disappearance or I'm going to become an invalid of society, or my principles will prevail. My principles, I've always held to them, and I've always had more opportunities after these events rather than less. The more cancellation they put on me, the more Newsweek articles about me, I've always gotten better out of them. So if you want to go the high route, although it's a tough life, you can go the high route in the dating sphere and you will endure much suffering, but your suffering doesn't matter. And that's how I approach life. My suffering doesn't matter because I will be released by death one day. So no matter how fucked up you want to insert stuff in there, and by the way, it's going to be a hard job because I'm fucking stubborn, but no matter how hard you want to go at this, This is a standing shield. That's how I see myself. I am a standing shield for my children. You can try fucking me up as much as you want. You can be the most evil whore ever. I am here to take it in, and one day I will die, and all of your efforts will be fruitless. And the only thing that will be left is no more suffering for me. It will be all for you if you're still alive and you're evil, and my children will have been spared your evil. So, Michael Monfort, that's my answer to you. Take it in if you can. That's not a life I recommend to everyone, but it's the life I've chosen, and it's very rewarding because you realize that this whole world, 99.999% of the people are moral weaklings. They are literally the scum of the earth. They are bacteria growing on shit. And you can do different. Low Mercury Tuna sends another super chat during the night. He said, genes that make people today compulsive and self-destructive gamblers, what did those genes make people do in prehistoric tribal times? Clearly, there must have been a benefit to it at that point. Well, the way I see gambling is there is no gambling machine in nature. So that's the first observation. It's a new stimulus. There's no equivalent in nature. Now, what is the thing that is triggered by this gambling machine? We know a lot about it cognitively. I mean, you can just tell by behavioral observation. Learning, rewards, labeling of rewards, fictive rewards, meaning what I could have gotten but didn't get, and risk. So those are the cognitive dimensions presented to you by a modern gambling machine. Now, what's the lie? What's the thing that's new in the gambling machine? It's a different math. So it's a different math presenting you five things that your brain really likes. Learning, rewards, labeling of rewards, fictive rewards, and risk. So what did humans do in prehistoric time that needed these things? Almost everything. Rewards. Well, you needed to be coming back to something that works. Needed to be coming back to something that gives back. And so that's why all gambling principles are based on paying off some degree of wins. You wouldn't have a successful gambling casino if you don't address the rewarding portion. But rewards have been useful in the entirety of our life, from sex to food, everything we do. So we had rewards. learning. Then we had rewards and the labeling of rewards. So why did we need rewards and labeling of rewards? Because we learn based on the label. We learn that a fruit is good because it's bright red. And then the next time, you don't even need to invoke in your brain, oh yeah, I will go seek some sugar in that apple. No, your brain is like, it's red, it's juicy, it's going to be good. So reward and labeling of reward. Fictive rewards. Fictive rewards is an element of gambling where you can see it explicitly in poker players. They get past two cards. They fold. And then when the river card comes in, and, oh, it was exactly the card they needed. And then they're like, oh, damn. Oh, damn, I should have stayed in the hand. Now, that's 99% of the normie poker players. Papa JF is like, don't say damn, because you should not be frustrated, because the decision was based without that knowledge. Everything that goes forward is irrelevant because you are folded. But the phenomenon of fictive reward in most people is very salient. It's the idea, oh, I could have gotten it. Ah, you know, if that cherry was aligned right this time, if that cherry was popping in a little faster, I would have gotten three cherries. Fictive rewards are a defect of the mind that artists like me are capable of resisting, but it is powerful. It is powerful. Bad poker players learn by fictive reward experience. Here's the problem. A fictive reward experience, which is very useful in nature, it's very useful in a world that isn't there to fuck you up. It's very useful in a non-living, non-evil world. Because in a non-living, non-evil world, the tree is not playing a game to keep you from getting apples from it. The tree is actually happy for you to get apples because it gets a seed, its seed spread. So basically in nature, unless you have another agent, try more intelligent than you and capable of better math than you, fictive rewards are an amazing way. Oh, I could have gotten more apple if I came here. Well, the next day you come here and there's more apple. But here's the problem in gambling. In gambling, that activity is poorly balanced. So let's say you have a 2 and a 7 in your hand. You fold. It's ridiculous to play 2 and a 7. It's the weakest hand. Unless you're going to go bluff, the right decision is to fold, no matter what happens on the table after. Now, the table is exposed, the first three cards, 2, 2, 7. Oh my God. I would have had a full house. I would have had a full house. Imagine how powerful a full house is. Imagine how good I would feel right now if I had a full house. Imagine how much I could rebet and re... Oh, and on top of it, I see that my neighbor is playing the hand. He has something or he's bluffing. Holy shit, I could have a full house against someone who's bluffing. And now your brain starts loving that experience more than it should. Because the chances of dropping your full house on the three first card, you're going to lose your bet a million times before that happens. You're going to lose your bet a million times. So your rational cognitive process should be a 2 and a 7 was folded. Take the current pleasure that I feel at the idea that I would have had a full house and divide it by 1 million. Now you get your real amount of pleasure that you should really feel at having a 2 and a 7. But we don't do that division. The brain is not prepared. The brain didn't face that kind of mathematics before. The brain has always been like, oh yeah, you come back and yeah, there's more apples in the tree. So that is the fictive reward component that many gambling actions, the whole fact that the gambling machines are a role and that you can see and that you can imagine what they could have been, that is all designed for the human brain to respond to fictive reward. Because when you think about it, why isn't a gambling machine just that big and outputting, yes, you won, or no, you didn't win? Because ultimately, the probabilities are this. I mean, I don't care if it's a cherry or a seven or a jack. It could be a machine that says, all right, you had 11% chance of winning, you didn't. Bye. But the fact that the machine is all built to be an interface with the human body, and oh, you can feel the seven, you can feel the cherry. Now I'm triggering your fictive reward learning. Now I'm biasing to something your brain has never seen before. And I'm exploiting it because I know my math are designed for you to eventually spit cash at this. I add a fifth component, but I don't remember everything I've been talking about. I said the learning, the rewards, the labeling of rewards, the fictive rewards, and risk seeking. Risk seeking was my fifth element. Risk seeking is merely, if you remove the cherries, you remove the seven, you remove the jacks, the two and the seven. Risk seeking is the idea that I am engaging with an umbrella of potential outcomes. I have zero right now. I could lose. I could win. Now, a game that you should play rationally is a game that is biased toward your wins. So it's a game where, oh, I could lose a little bit, but I could win so much. And of course, a casino game is always biased toward the loss. You wouldn't run a casino if you don't bias the games toward the loss. But that is a defect of our brain. The assumption that in taking a risk, you're going to be rewarded was probably very true in a world where, okay, you might die, but you can be careful and not fall down a cliff, and you can be careful if there's a wild animal and you run back. The risks are not very high. And so our brain is not habituated to a mathematics of systemic risk bias toward the loss. And in fact, there's I could add a sixth component. So we end up with the machine, and our instincts are, whenever you take risk, JF, you're going to be rewarded. So be crazy. Go out there. You're going to find some apples. And as it turns out, the machines are designed with a risk toward the loss. And the last factor, number six, that I would add is loss aversion. The loss aversion and its contrary, risk seeking. Most people are loss averse naturally. So we'd rather stay in the current situation rather than lose. But we don't like losing. So much so that we're willing to forego certain opportunities. So our brain is not totally wicked. It's not totally bugged. Our brain is capable of saying, hey, you know, I'm not going to engage in that $1 bet to win $2. I don't really care about the $2. I don't want to lose $1. And in fact, we prefer, even if that bet is fair, we prefer not engaging on bets that are fair unless they are life-changing or unless they are massively life-changing. Like when you reach the, all right, but would you bet $1 for $1 million? That's it. Like $1 is a very small loss. $1 million is a very big win. Now, these bets in casinos and lottery, they all get more unjust for you. They all rationally, they are wrong and wronger and wronger. Because the reality is you need more the dollar than you need the $1 million divided by the number of chances you have of actually getting it. But our brain is capable of discounting small value and focusing on big value. So, oh yeah, you know what? I don't care at all about losing a dollar every week of my life for the rest of my life. Because $1 million would be life-changing in my view, but $1 doesn't change my life at all. In fact, I threw $1 at a homeless person yesterday. And then the other day, I gave $1 to increase my McDo fries size. So people become discounting of small values, and then they amplify the value of big outcomes. Oh my God, how $1 million would change my life. So all of this to answer your... I've been doing a 40-minute show up to now, almost just answering your two super chats. To Michael and Low Mercury Tuna. But I'm happy to have given you guys the full state of the art in the domain that I'm an expert of, which is neuroeconomics. As it turns out, my postdoc was in this domain, so I know very much what is what is at play in biasing human decisions. NN says, I question the legitimacy of big lottery jackpots. Yes, I mean, there's lots of questions around fairness in these things. And I would say, I will believe they are totally fair the day they are the result of a ZK-proof blockchain thing. And you have some online casinos have started developing these mathematics, and they are really sound. You know, you can really prove that you were fair to the player. And personally, I only believe in fairness if that is the case. If you have a decentralized random generation that is ZK-proof. Anyways, hey, I'm excited about this trailer. I'm going to show you the whole trailer because that seems very tacky, but it's a Coppola movie that is coming out now. Apparently, Coppola has been self-sacrificing. It took 50 years for him to do this movie. He self-financed it with $120 million by selling his winery. Oh my God. Megalopolis. So that is Coppola. I didn't even know he was still alive. I thought he was a classic cineast. Apparently, he's still alive and 80 years old, and he came out with this movie himself. And man, I'm excited. That seems like a serious statement. I want you to look at this trailer and think, okay, there's lots of degeneracy, lots of clownish circus stuff in there. But it's a critique of all this. I think that Coppola has prepared a movie about the fall of American civilization. And he believes that the fall of American civilization will be exactly like the fall of the Roman Empire. And he decided to write a fantastic fable about it. I'm interested. That sounds very interesting. Look at this.
When does an empire die? Does it collapse in one terrible moment? No, no. But there comes a time when its people no longer believe in it.
Don't let the now destroy the forever.
Ladies and gentlemen, and children of all ages, welcome.
Is this society, is this way we're living, the only one that's available to us?
We are taking our city back.
And when we ask these questions, when there's a dialogue about them, that basically is a utopia.
I'm excited as fuck. This guy says, this guy seems to be, you know, the guy they feature here. This guy seems to be some kind of AI CEO of some kind of entertainer in New York, producing entertainment for the masses, or some intellectual of some kind. And I had to listen many times to hear his words. He says, can we live another reality than the one we currently live? When we start engaging in that conversation, that's already a utopia. And wow, he's probably being framed as an evil AI CEO who wants to be too technocratic, who wants to control the world, who wants to give people all the pleasures they demand. And if I understand the trailer correctly, the film will be critical of this. He's going to be the villain. I love it. I love it. Dino Logovich says, dystopian future is here. Shamrock Shake says, looks better than the usual modern crap. You know what it reminds me in terms of a trailer? It reminds me of an extremely bad movie. A movie that to me may stand as the most disappointing movie with respect to how excited I was at the trailer, but how bad it was. Southland Tales. Did you guys ever watch Southland Tales? This totally reminds me of the Southland Tales trailer. Oops, we have some publicity. The Southland Tales trailer, ladies and gentlemen. I was excited when I saw this trailer, and the movie turned out to be absolutely bad.
I'm going to tell you the story of the journey down the road not taken. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. These are the sordid tales of how it all came crashing down.
This is an epic Los Angeles crime saga.
And you're researching your role?
Yes. It takes place in the near future.
Scientists are saying the future is going to be far more futuristic than they originally predicted.
You're gonna have to wear a bulletproof vest.
Let's talk about your phone. What's it really about?
Yes.
Now the trailer goes into, and you realize, oh no, it's just a fucking regular movie with with Justin Timberlake and The Rock. And you get into the movie and it's like, no, it's not at all about the end of the world. And it's not about a parallel universe story of any kind. It's just a confused movie. Real Bass Talk says, I don't get these trailers. Well, I like trailers that give you a taste of the fantastic. I think that both trailers do so, and they make you guess that, oh my God, something weird is going on in this movie. I have to figure it out. I love this kind of trailer, and they hit you strong at the beginning of the Southland Tale. You know, it's like, oh, the end of the world, a bunch of kids, nuclear holocaust, holy shit, what the... And no, the movie isn't about this. I have had difficulty actually understanding what goes on in the movie. Saturn Shine says, just rewatch The Terminator. Well, yeah, I mean, the classical. And, you know, I've been studying Terminator 2 for decades now. And I can't believe that sometimes I'm on Twitter and I see someone make me understand a scene better than I ever did. And it happened actually this week. So I see on Twitter some guy says that the whole nuclear bomb blowing the skeleton of Sarah Connor hanging onto the fence, that ultimately she was looking at kids. And I've always interpreted it as she's looking at humanity basically being blown off by the nuclear bomb. I mean, I think it's it's basically a good explanation, but he went further. He says she's looking at the kids she could have had. She's looking at the kids that could be hers. And it totally goes well with the movie that, yes, it's Sarah Connor had to choose a life of fighting to preserve her only children as opposed to continuing to make more children. That hadn't struck me before, but that scene is probably what it says. James says, you know it's going to be a bad movie when they call the movie epic and intriguing in the trailer. You are not writing a poster. You have 3 minutes to describe a world, but they give it general platitudes. Well, I don't know if you talk about the Southland Stairs trailer here, but the Coppola one seems like it's going to be Coppola's last statement. At 80 years old, it's a miracle that he even was able to do it. But there it is. I will be excited at looking at it. Capitol Police are investigating after a bag of cocaine with residue has been found on the floor inside the United States Capitol Police. Listen, not surprised. I mean, they've been finding cocaine in the White House. They've been finding this administration has a problem with gay sex, gay porn, filming in public institutions, and cocaine. Who would have guessed? Who would have guessed that by farming degeneracy on your side of politics, when you take power, you end up with degeneracy? A guy was arrested. Here he's a teacher. He was traveling 90 miles toward Oregon to meet with a child, or what he believed was a child. The police has arrested him. Ladies and gentlemen, this guy has been teaching your kids if you send your kids to public school.
Drop out the window! Face away from me!
All right, Kevin. Because they'll know everything about Jessica, all right?
I know.
So why were you here? How old was she? What'd you guys talk about?
And, you know, this connects back with something I said about gambling. The human brain of the pedos is basically like the human brain of the gamblers. It's not prepared for the police work of today. So this guy thought for perhaps weeks, months, I don't know. This guy thought he was speaking to Jessica, and the police is like, okay, so we know everything about Jessica, so tell us about her. And, you know, the human brain thinks it's talking to humans, thinks that the interface is secure, but it's not. Very often. I'm happy that these things are happening, but I think it must be catching so little of it. Shamrock Shake says, why are there so many pedos? Well, state of Wisconsin buys nearly $100 million worth of BlackRock spot Bitcoin ETFs. The state's investment board bought 94,000 shares of BlackRock's iShares Bitcoin Trust. We have now the Tates are saying that they will go full all-in $100 million in Bitcoin. They don't trust accumulation of wealth of any kind anymore. They've understood that the state was after them anyway, and that even if they were in this distant country, the West still has power and still is capable of corrupting the legal system in their country. So they want to go full Bitcoin and go on a boat. Well, that is a good message. I don't know if they are going to do it for real or if they're already in Bitcoin. So you never know if what people say is true, but they say they will provide blockchain proof that they have acquired the 100 million Bitcoin. Well, that's good for Bitcoin. Everyone who's serious about being an agent of accumulation of wealth and resistance against the state has to be in Bitcoin, because they're going to get at you. Barge strikes bridge in Galveston, Texas. The crisis of competency, ladies and gentlemen. A second bridge that is just bumped into by a gigantic ship. That has been happening way too often in 2024 to be due to random. We must be in a special moment of the world, a special moment of incompetence and of lower standards. Putin masses more than 500,000 troops on the Ukrainian front line. I don't know from AF Post, what is the basis for this? Is that recent? I don't know the validity of this, but it might mean that Putin is serious about going into Ukraine further, extending his domination of territory. He might have felt that the front line has weakened, because what we get from the Ukrainian side is basically they have no one left. So they're barely holding up right now. And you can see entries in Kharkiv, in the direction of Kharkiv. So we may be headed toward a year of progression for Putin. Doubting Thomas says, JF, Red Lobster has also been dramatically leaking their main class of boomer customers who would come in regularly for the weekly special, who have been dying off. New generations are not interested in these crappy chain restaurants. Oh yeah, that's correct. It's that I want to say that the explanation I laid out about the people who have money are different people now. So the new liberal that is rising to be kind of middle class, although the middle class is being hit strong, but the white liberal that has money now wants something more hipster, more researched, more deep than Red Lobster. So Red Lobster was really only satisfying a generation of boomers who could take in such bad food, really. And on the other hand, there's a big replacement by minorities who have more money now, and they might get into your restaurant, but you might also end up paying the price for it. Diaz is God says, who is your favorite ancient Greek and why? You know, I don't know much about ancient Greeks. And my favorite guy is Euclid. The others, I don't know much about them. So it's not to say that they're not good. Let me tell you, I've sometimes read, I don't even remember the names of the author. But what was the name? It wasn't a Greek. It was a Roman, Cato the Great. Who was the Great? Something the Great. Cato the Great. Encyclopedia. I don't remember his name, but I had brought up. It's not Cato. Cato the Elder, my God. This guy is my man. I don't think he's a Greek, but a Roman soldier, senator. Yeah, so Euclid, and Euclid, I don't know if he would qualify as Greek for you. I think he was Greek, but studying in Egypt at times. Euclid. Let's see. Is Euclid Greek? An ancient Greek mathematician. Okay, he's considered a Greek. Considered the father of geometry. Well, then definitely, if they consider him totally Greek, then he qualifies as my main ancient Greek man. But Cato the Elder, you can read this stuff, which is from 234 to 149 BC. So you can read something pre-Jesus Christ, and holy shit, this guy has some insight. You can just read his stuff, read his encyclopedia, and okay, this guy has some thinking going on. It's freaking hilarious. You can have the greatest fun just opening the kind of encyclopedia or whatever his book series are. And James says he has similar personality to JF. Really? Because I didn't read in depth, but I had great fun reading passages. I didn't know that he would have a personality like mine. But that doesn't surprise me. I connected with this guy reading. Can you imagine? You read something from 2,200 years ago. And you have this kind of, oh, yeah, that's nice. Oh, yeah, bro. Tell them. Yeah, those are my two favorite authors. Euclid is really a foundational guy in my cognition because I read his stuff when the internet became public, 97, 98, you know, available in Quebec. Maybe a little bit before, but because I was on BBS's. Anyways, I had a copy of his Elements on a very early computer and totally formed my mathematical mind. Cringe Panda says, the show is too laggy tonight. It's probably my internet. Okay. And someone has reported to me that Cringe Panda is actually a woman. And actually a YouTuber. So I didn't know. I remember that Cringe Panda was out there in the memes, but I didn't remember this, that she was a YouTuber. But to those of you who are asking, Jeff, is Cringe Panda your next wife? Is she on a waiting list? There is no Papa Jeff waiting list anymore. So if you're any of the women out there, there is no chance in hell that you will ever get inseminated by Papa JF. So don't be on a list awaiting the great day. It's not going to come. I have chosen in life that that my current girlfriend is my last sexual partner of any kind, anything. There is no possibility. She could divorce me, divorce rape me, kidnap my children. I would go on. I'm headed to the forest. I'm surviving on mushrooms. I am not taking in any other woman, which I don't think that she will divorce me because she is a faithful, loyal, and principled woman. but even if she was, there is no other woman ever. You know how Nick Fuentes says no e-girl ever? I can say something bigger than Nick Fuentes as an older man. I can say, no girls ever. It's done. No dating, no talking on the phone, no charming, no selecting, no going to bars, no socializing, no fake displays to show that I'm kind of normal. Fuck it. I'm going all in. I'm satisfied with life. Can you see it? Shamrock says, she got JF around her little finger. I mean, yes, you could say this, but it's not even about my current girlfriend. It's not like, oh, she is so great that I cannot love another woman. No, it's that, well, first, yes, there's this. I think that no matter if I was to look for another woman and try to find another woman like her, I don't think I could. I don't think I could in all of the world given me billions of years. There's this, but it's also that I'm done. I have given so much to the female insemination cause. I don't have anything in me anymore. I want to take the rest of my life to enjoy life. Rather than be around these fucking normie women. Okay, Red Lobster, Endless Shrimp Disaster. So that's the kind of videos that were early signs. For the racialist of the internet, we had been keeping tabs. And we were watching Red Lobster. We were checking the pulse. And you will have heard me across the years say, hey, these business dealings, this idea of running restaurants, is becoming unviable. It cannot last. So here we have one example of the tension that was exerted on Red Lobster.
This had to be one of the worst experiences I've had at a restaurant in a long time. So we took the family out today to try the endless shrimp, and it was ridiculous. We ordered two endless shrimps. meals and two kids' meals. We were told that if we were caught sharing the meals with our family, with our kids, they would charge us for more endless shrimps. The food was not good. The service, the waiter, she was cool. So I'll give her like a 7 out of 10, but the food and the overall experience was a 0 out of 10. The manager was walking around trying to be friendly, but she was actually policing us, looking to see if we were sharing food. She even mentioned, hey, you know, if I see you sharing food, you know, we have to charge you for that. Red Lobster, if you're going to do something like this, man, y'all just need to shut down. This is ridiculous.
Now, what I don't hear is a denial that they were sharing food, because it's like, okay, I wanna interpret, maybe it's kind of tacky for a manager to come and monitor you and say, oh yeah, if you share your all-you-can-eat buffet, I'm going to have to charge two all-you-can-eat. But if you've done it, if you've actually, and it seems to me that there are maybe children that are maybe picking into the shrimp bowl. Look, I mean, you filmed your... This is becoming so much bigger than it should be. You filmed your own crime. Look, they paid two shrimps all you can eat. I think that this is a kid. I think this is a kid dipping in the shrimp. You filmed your own crime. I was about to absolve you. I was about to absolve you and say, you know what? It sucks what the manager did to these black people. But no, your kid is the third person. So you took an all-you-can-eat. Your wife took an all-you-can-eat. Your kid, we saw him. He's dipping the shrimp. So all these leftists that are coming after me and saying, Jeff, you're delusional. No, I am affirmed by the facts of the world. Why does it always have to be me that's right? And yeah, Red Lobster seemed to be an important component of Black life. Here we see even Beyoncé mentioning it as the place you bring your husband.
To choose who you love is your human right. How you identify and see yourself is your human right. Who you make love to and take that ass to Red Lobster.
Yeah! So taking that ass to Red Lobster was kind of becoming an LGBT right of sorts. It was a message of pride, and it was the rainbow flag, and it's like, yeah, you go, girl, you go claim those endless shrimps. But the endless shrimp deal has come very hard. 3 years ago, there were massive, many million dollar losses reported for Red Lobster. And yeah, so just to remind ourselves and to kind of archive forever, I mean, you look at this. This is way too costly of a food item to be serving in some sort of all-you-can-eat format. You know, these shrimps, the biggest they are, the more selected they are, and they kind of cost a lot. You don't want to give endless shrimps like this, because when you give something endless, it has to be the absolute crap, and you can't possibly stuff your stomach more than this. And we have stories of here. Red Lobster CFO blames chain's endless shrimp promotion for company's whopping 11 million Q3 loss. So they were hemorrhaging money. A Black Tie has sent a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, Jeff, have you ever listened to the band called Bread? Their song Sweet Surrender expresses your feelings about your girlfriend well. Okay, I maybe Sweet Surrender. Is it this song? Maybe I've heard it before. In any case, to archive and leave a memory about Red Lobster, and so that we never forget what they took from us. I'm leaving the show tonight on this ad from 1993. Goodbye, gentlemen.
Wow, that's a lot of shrimp.
At Red Lobster, for a limited time, enjoy 30 shrimp for just $9.99.
What sounds good to you folks tonight? 30 shrimp, please. Great choice.
With lemon pepper shrimp, succulent scampi, delicious grilled shrimp, and our famous fried shrimp. That's four different kinds. 30 shrimp on one plate, just $9.99, at only one place.
Only at Red Lobster.
And kids get shrimp, too. A complete meal, just $1.99.